Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, The Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
I'm tweaking into a whole new era. G-Funk, step to this, I dare ya. Funk on a whole new level. The rhythm is the bass, and the bass is the treble.
Hey, what's up, Sense fans? Welcome back to the Sixth Sense Podcast, coming to you from the majestic CKCU studios here in the nation's capital. Joining me in the studios right now is Creech.
What's up,
man? How are you?
Good, you?
Not too bad.
Pumped up?
Not too bad. My liver's finally had a little bit of a break from the All-Star weekend.
But, I know.
Everything's going well.
Expensive weekend.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. But how was your experience? I know you were working the floor at a lot of the events themselves.
Oh, it was unreal. You want to talk about that stuff right now?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was unreal. I worked fanfare on Thursday, Friday, mostly just collecting interviews for the team, just running down, hounding down guys, basically. It wasn't too busy on the Thursday. Basically, the only players that were there were a couple of Senators guys, and they were pretty busy with their autograph sessions and stuff like that. But we got Colin Greening and Eric Carlson on the show, and then Friday was a really cool day. There's a few more players at Fanfare, but also worked media day at the Westin, and that was unbelievable. Just a free for all from about 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock of just players and the coaches of the All-Star games just coming
brushing
into
elbows,
big,
yeah, eh?
Unbelievable.
Just brushing elbows.
All the big shots. It was pretty cool actually. We were setting up. We were in the corner because we were going live. Like the team was going live, so we were in the corner set up right beside TSN Radio. And then you look over into where all the writers and everything are sitting, and there's this huge power table of Dragger and McKenzie and all
Eklund.
Those boys.
No?
Yeah. I don't know what he looks like. Just a shadow, right? So couldn't tell.
It's just him behind like a blacked out screen. You just see a silhouette. Yeah. That would be good. So that's good. So any players in particular surprise you or very personable?
My favorite was Ryan Johansson.
From Columbus?
Yeah. He was really cool.
Probably because he's out of Columbus.
he wasn't too happy about the season. I was asking
no.
him in chat. Surprise,
no.
Shocker. No, but he was a good guy. He was pumped up to get on the station and get interviewed and to get the action going. He was quite thrilled. And he was like a kid in there. Well, first off, he looks like he's 17. But, well, what is he, 19, I guess?
Yeah.
He looks real young. But he was walking over, and we were just chatting before he was on air. And Zdeno Chara walks by, and he's like, oh, man. He's like, Zdeno Chara is huge. Like, he was just like one of us seeing one of these All-Stars come through. It was pretty cool. A couple of other guys, Jimmy McLennan was really cool to meet, Kevin Weeks. I met so many people, but those were my favorite. Obviously, the usual guys you'd think are hilarious and cool, like Scott Hartnell and those guys, Claude Giroux.
Did you meet Ray Ferraro? Did he make fun of your voice? No.
Somebody fucking go! Can I say that on here?
Yeah, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Yeah,
it's an amateur podcast. You can say whatever you want.
No, he wasn't making fun of my voice.
Good stuff. So, the Senators are back at it. They lost one last night. Or, sorry, it was a couple nights ago to Boston. 4-game losing streak. What's going on? What do you make of it?
Well, as we were chatting before, I think we probably said this on the last podcast too, is they haven't been playing well for a while. Even when they, what was it, 4-game winning streak that they were on before?
Yeah, there's like an 8-game sample size before the Boston game.
Yeah, they were
8-1-1
or something like that. They hadn't been playing well for a while. In that Montreal game.
Yeah.
Shit the bed the entire time.
But Craig Anderson's been standing on his head, keeping them in games. And they were getting some timely goals and winning some games that they probably shouldn't have. And but at the same time, they've accumulated enough points where they have kind of like, they have that cushion where it hasn't cost them too much. So they haven't
slid. The tough thing, sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to finish up by saying that they haven't slid too much in the standings, knock on wood, but
now all those teams are playing those games. And
Well, that's the problem, right? They have all those games. All those teams have those games in hand. And it's, you do a lot of scoreboard watching these days. When's the last time we could say we were actually doing that, though, at this time of the year?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I've noticed a lot of people, though, are kind of concerned that Toronto's winning games of all teams.
Oh, because
if Toronto passes Ottawa in the standings.
I guess you always like to finish ahead of the Leafs as a Sens fan.
Oh, especially if Ottawa finished eighth.
It would just be beautiful to see them finish ninth again.
Oh, and Ottawa's no that playoffs. Eighth place team? Yeah, that would be unbelievable.
No playoffs since...
Unbelievable.
Since free lockout? That would be unbelievable.
More actually. Ammo for Don Cherry? To throw Brian Burke's away?
I want to get into that. I was kind of cool that Brian Burke kind of didn't want to talk about that during the All-Star game. Not surprised.
Very classy. Very classy on that on his part.
I sense some sarcasm, but still... You know, sometimes when to not mess around and just let the players have their spotlight and all that jazz.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, let's not talk about the Leafs.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyways, Ottawa, 4-game losing streak now. They play the Islanders tomorrow night at home. Very beatable team, although the Islanders, I think, have one of the highest scoring lines in hockey, if not the highest scoring line in hockey, with the Tavares, Parento,
Matt Molson. Tavares on fire.
Yeah, that line's playing really well.
As you said, they all are. Tavares just a beast. Apparently, he's a freak in the offseason. He just got jacked over the year. Like I saw him at Media Day, and his legs look like tree trunks.
Is he on the Gary Roberts program?
I don't think he's a part of that.
No?
Yeah. He might be. I could be completely wrong, but I thought he was doing something else. I could be way wrong. I feel stupid right now. But
no, who cares?
I heard that he's a freak. I don't know if he's
We should
with
put
Gary
Kyle Turris on the Gary Roberts plan. Bulk that kid up. The way he's playing, unbelievable.
Carlson.
Ooh, Carlson's another one. We should just send him.
You see his interview with Hockey News?
The one with Eric Carlson on the cover?
Yeah.
And it says, the cocksure super sweet on the cover? That's like the little byline beside him.
King Carlson. That's what all the boys call him.
Awesome. Yeah, the kid's got some swagger.
He does. He looked nervous. That's what I brought up, though. He looked nervous. And like the Hockey News made a video of the interview. I haven't read the article yet because I haven't... If I'm airing out beefs here, I haven't received my article in the mail yet. I did just move, but it's updated. It should be there. But I watched the videos last night online, and he looked nervous, and he didn't look like his normal
Well, this
swagger.
Is kind of like the All-Star Weekend, as much as it was about Alfredson's kind of like commemoration and remembering his career and legacy here in Ottawa. It was almost, well, to a lesser extent, obviously, but I felt like it was almost Eric Carlson's coming out party as well. Like a lot of people had a firsthand experience of what Eric Carlson means to the city of Ottawa and how he can play. And I thought he played like a little bit of a prominent role this weekend.
Completely agree. Absolutely. I thought he came out of his shell a little bit in front of like a national stage when he was chirping Spezza about going ahead of him, saying that he was pissed off in the back and his black eye was getting blacker. That was pretty good.
Did you see the YouTube video of him screaming, "How you like me," after Daniel Alfredson's first goal at the All-Star game?
No. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, with the Sedins and Alfie. Awesome. Oh. And the crowd's just eating it up, and yeah, it's unbelievable.
That's the thing I missed being out at the rink. Like I heard Carey Price, like everyone blew up on Twitter and everything, talking about how classic Carey Price was during the skills comp, but I was there, so I didn't get any of that audio, so I kind of missed part of that, but obviously...
But you know what? A lot of people were bitching heading into this game that, like, there weren't enough personalities at the All-Star game with, like, without Crosby or Ovechkin there. But at the same time, you get to showcase all these other guys from around the league. Like, Carey Price was hilarious. Kane's just, you know...
Patrick Kane is at the top of the list, I'd say. Anyone watch 24/7, they see how Claude Giroux is.
Yeah.
That guy's pretty hilarious. Scott Hartnell was throwing checks in the All-Star game.
Yeah.
That guy's got to be the biggest beauty of all time. Like, if he's on your team, he's your favorite teammate.
And you dig the Hartnell down hashtag, his old charitable endeavor?
They should make a Foligno one.
They should, or McCulloch.
Yeah.
I think that would be the greatest. Like,
as I've told you about Conesvita and I counting how many times Foligno falls for no apparent reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we usually call an over and under. Usually it's 2.5.
Oh, yeah?
Going into every game, he just bails for no
inexplicably
reason.
Falling all over the place, yeah. For the listeners who don't really know what we're talking about right now, Scott Hartnell has a charity where every time he falls down on the ice, he donates $1,000 to, I forget the cause, but it's very nice of him.
Yeah.
And he pokes fun of him, at himself in the process, so it's quite hilarious. People have fun with it.
Hilarious guy. We've kind of drifted way off path from talking about the Islanders, but do you want to get back to that?
Man. Yes.
All right. So we talked about their top
hosting,
line lighting.
Good hosting.
No, I'm not. I was like, whoa, really? I took that. Where did I go? Tavares. His tree trunk legs, man. How can I? I had to mention that. The guy's a beast. But no, the Islanders seem to give the Senators problems too. You think it's a must-win game, I guess, and they always...
Just to get that monkey off your back, right? You're looking out the door. Who's that? Who's that
walking in? You hear the door handle going. Get out of here.
You heard footsteps, thought it might be Johnny T.
Johnny T breaking the studios down here at CKCU with his tree trunk thighs. You ran here from Long Island already.
Oh, there you go. Anyways.
Are they going to break out of this on Friday?
Well, Paul McClain, this morning at practice, he's kind of like shaking up the lines a bit. Eric Condra is now on the first line. Colin Greening has been bumped down to the third. The second line will stay the same. Foligno, Turris, Offerton. But he's making slight tweaks here or there to get the guys going. I know Spezza, I think, has been pointless in his last two or three games.
Yeah.
So just to get the first line rolling, get them back in a groove, that'd be fantastic. The power play has to get going at some point. It's been stagnant for a while now. The units are all messed up. I don't know if you've seen them, but some of the beat guys were tweeting them from practice today. And the first line was Greening, Spezza, Neal, and with Carlson and Gonchar on defense, obviously. And then the second unit was Foligno, McCulloch, Turris. And then you had Alfredson and Kuba on the point. I don't like the first unit personally, but
it's a pretty good second unit, but not that I like to fault Paul McClain because he's done an unbelievable job with this group. But I don't like that first unit at all. You got to give Spezza at least somebody who has any hands. Like, Neil's not going to... Didn't you have a stat something about how many goals Neil's been on the ice for a power play goal?
Yeah, it was like he was on for 6 goals this season for Ottawa. So he was on the ice for 6 power play goals. And I think he was on for 3 shorthanded, so he has a net of +3 on the power play, which is minuscule in the greater scheme of things.
If you're going to put a guy like that out to cause havoc in front, fine, that's fine. But give him at least put McCulloch on there or Alfredson. I'd say stack the first unit. If you're going to have Carlson, I know Alfredson and Spezza kind of like to play that half wall the same kind of way, and if Carlson's going to be coming down with Gonchar, I understand, but give him Turris or McCulloch or something.
And Carlson usually plays the full 2 minutes on the power play anyways, right?
Usually.
So if you start limiting his minutes on the power play because you want to get the second unit out there with Alfredson and Kuba, it kind of it could have a crazy adverse effect on what Carlson's doing as well.
Like, if Spezza's that first unit,
who's he going to pass to? Carlson?
He'll pass to Carlson, so keep someone on Carlson, which they're probably going to be keen on anyways. And obviously you're going to be keen on Spezza because he's moving the puck. He's quarterbacking that.
Yeah, but obviously the team's going to correct what they're doing. And they'll shadow Spezza and Carlson on the power play and then try and let Chris Neal beat you. I take that. I trust my goalie on that.
Absolutely. But yeah, I don't really like that. Given everyone's talking about Raven, how good Turris' wrist shot is.
Mm-hmm.
Put him out there with Spezza.
Showcase. Yeah, I think like many of his points this season have come even strength. So it'd be nice to see him get a little bit more power play exposure as well. So I agree with you there. Moving on. Zach Smith, not producing. What do you think?
Well, he's a bottom six forward. He's produced until this point.
2 points in the month of January. That's one goal low. And one assist.
That's low. That's disappointing. But he's still doing other things.
Do you think he's hurt? Because I've heard this rumor kicked around. I've heard whispers.
I'm sure they're all kind of banged up.
Yeah, this time of season, for sure.
I think Colin Greening's banged up. But see, you said he was moved down to the third or fourth line today? Third?
Third line.
Which is fine for him. He can bump around the top 9.
Yeah.
But I think he might be hurt.
Seeing Condra and Greening kind of get bumped around the lineup, though, that kind of it kind of gives you some perspective as to how, you know, like this team's weakness as they head towards the off season. I know fans are probably getting excited about potential trade deadline acquisitions, but when you have Eugene Melnyk coming out and saying all the right things about not forsaking the future for a quick fix now, just if they want to win a playoff round or two. I don't know. The organization is sending out the right messages, but fans will get their hopes up. But what do you do?
If they can add a top 6 guy without selling the farm or something, just go with what you got. If you're going to lock up position, keep your steam. Maybe add some depth guys, obviously, like another defenseman. Maybe another guy that could play that bottom 6 defenseman role. Give it some more toughness.
I hate the speed. Yeah, team speed on the back four kind of bothers me. Don't see a lot of it. I know scoring chances were kind of even. I was looking at one of the guys who contributes to the website, Scott, had the scoring chances pretty even throughout the course of the Boston game. But you watched that, and then the defense was getting beat wide and deep all night long. Brad Marchand was a terror on the back end. It's tough to watch, man. It's tough to watch. Mind you, first game back after a long break. What do you do?
Tough roadie.
Yeah, tough road trip as well. So
I don't want to see them make any big changes. If they're going to find somebody to fit in a top 6 role, maybe do it there during the summer. if you make the playoffs this year, hey, everyone picked you to finish 15th.
And if Toronto finishes out of it, even better, right?
There you go. And if you play Washington or Florida in the first round, you might get a couple more home dates in the playoffs for Eugene.
Speaking of Eugene, I actually wanted to talk to you about something that he said on Team 1200, actually, at the All-Star weekend. Yes. He's had conversations with Brian Murray about calling up Robin Lehner. We hit on this on the last episode of the podcast as well.
What are they going to do, we said?
Yeah, so they've kicked this idea around. What do you think?
I like that. Kind of sucks for Alex Auld. Kind of puts him in a tough position, but Craig Anderson can't play the final 30 games of the regular season. Actually, well, more since he's already been playing a ton.
It's almost like Alex Auld is the backup in name only, right? Like, you know, if Anderson was to get hurt, Robin Lehner would be the number one goalie on this
Absolutely.
Team, right?
Absolutely. He said that going into the season.
It's hilarious, though. It's just a different feeling because you look down at Binghamton, and whether it's through inconsistent play or injuries, Robin Lehner's not starting the bulk of the games down there. But he would be the number one guy in Ottawa. I just think that's absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculously hilarious, sorry. I should correct myself.
I think it's great, too. You see any of his tweets from Miami during
yes.
the AHL
Get Hot Lenny. Get Hot Lenny was my favorite one.
Oh, man. He'll have some fun up here. They should give him a few games. Absolutely.
You don't trust Aldo?
No. Not at all. I don't know. I'm not trying to be funny or anything. You know what I mean? Especially with how they're on the bubble. Like, how can you give him important starts right now? Even against, like, the Islanders or anyone.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I don't even know if he's had a start in... I can't even remember the last time he had a start and actually finished the game.
And finished all? I don't know. Vancouver,
maybe?
Maybe
December? I feel like it's December, like late November.
Did he play the Vancouver game? Yeah.
Yeah. That might have been it. That was in December, too, I believe.
Yeah. Only thing I can remember about Alex Auld is being pulled or winning that... What did he put up against? Was it Washington he got pulled? Or was it Washington that he played well, but they still lost?
They lost 2-1, and then he got the start against Philly the next night and got lit up in the first period, was yanked after three goals.
I knew that
was
a mistake.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, well. Just, I don't know, no faith in him right now, and I don't know. I don't know if the guys do either. I think I'd bring up Robin Lehner, or if they can pick up some guy off waivers who's going to come in and...
Well, that was the other joke, right? Like, they had Nitti Mackey on waivers right before the All-Star game. But, I mean, at his price tag, he's a guy who hasn't played a lot in the last season and a half. Why roll the dice?
Just as much confidence as him as Auld right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who knows what that guy's able to offer you right now either, right? So, go with what you have. I hope they bring up the kid.
You have to
give some... He's got, what I like about Robin Lehner is he has that kind of moxie and that swagger to him. It's not like that Ray Emery, like, over, you know, where it's, like, over the top and it's just beyond ridiculous. I don't know. There's something about the kid. You just gravitate towards
him. Just laugh.
Yeah. And he's awesome.
He's unbelievable. He's a character, and he's just the things he says in the media. It's great. And they got to give Craig Anderson a rest.
At some point.
They have to.
But he's been playing well.
He has been playing well. What do you think about that goal that skipped up from the red line?
That stuff happens all the time. Yeah. He was playing well leading up to that. His rebound control was fantastic.
I missed the third period because I was on my way to hockey / getting ready and playing hockey. So I saw the highlights, but I didn't see the third period. They were getting dominated, though, eh?
By Boston? No. I don't know. Like, they held their own.
Yeah.
Through two periods, they held their own.
I mean in the third period.
In the third period, they got outshot. It's funny because gauging, we'll get into this in a second about the refereeing, but Ottawa let in a goal late in the second period. Brad Marchand muscles Chris Phillips in front of the net, buries one. 3-2, heading into the intermission. They come back out. They get outshot 12-6, I believe, in the third period. No power plays for Ottawa. Fans are just going crazy on Twitter. Craig Anderson lets in a shot, and it's just...
What was the reaction on Twitter for that?
People were dropping F-bombs. Like, just, it was disbelief. It happens, though. You can't get mad.
It doesn't happen as much as it does.
I think someone just scored another, like, 80-footer the other night, too. It happens. Every season it happens, like,
you see that puck
two
skip?
Or three times. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, that's tough to lose like that.
But yeah, it's funny because up to that point, Ottawa's in the game. Fans are fine. Nobody's complaining about anything. But as soon as that Anderson goal went in, within 2 minutes of that point, the fans on Twitter just got on the refereeing and how Ottawa had not had a power play yet.
And it's funny, over like, from the West Coast trip.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of been the storyline with the fans for the past 4 or 5 days. It's just everybody's bitching about Carlson being called a diver. There was the Chris Phillips hand on the puck in L.A. There's a power playless game against Boston. Conspiracy. That's the talk. Those are the words being muttered. And then you look at Carey Fraser's response to a number of emails he received from the Ottawa fan base talking about the bias that the NHL and the NHL referees have against the organization.
You have to be pretty mad to watch a game, throw your converter across the room, whatever you're going to do, and then send an email off to Carey Fraser talking about...
Obviously, if you're so passionate and angry about something, why would you send this Carey Fraser of all people? Why would that guy, a former NHL referee, why would he of all people come out and say, oh yeah, there's obviously a bias against Ottawa. The sanctity of the game would be ruined if he came out and said anything. Like, what do you expect him to say? What do you expect him to say?
No answers for you. I got nothing to say right now.
People are nuts.
People are nuts. Fans are...
Tinfoil hats.
What's fans stand for?
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I can say.
I have to say, though, my favorite part of that whole Carey Fraser column, I don't know if you've read it yet.
I haven't read the column. I read the...
The best blurb is he talks about the things that people would say to him on the ice. He's like, I've had people throw things at me, water bottles, sticks, whatever. I've had people say the most heinous things ever that you could ever imagine. And he's like, I even had one player spit in my mouth. I'd rather have all these things happen than have someone question my manhood or my integrity.
Wow.
I'd rather have someone question my integrity than have someone spit in my mouth. it's pretty disgusting.
Did he say
man.
Anything about spitting in his hair?
No.
No?
No.
Nah.
No.
Different story there.
All right, Creech. So it's probably about that time where we should get off and take a break. Stay tuned. All right, listeners, joining us on the line right now is the Ian Mendez. Ian, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys tonight?
Oh, not too bad. Thanks for coming in and saving our bacon.
Yeah, nothing like being the backup to the backup. I was probably the backup to the backup. You probably sent out like 7 emails and I was probably the only guy that responded, or maybe some other guy. I don't know where I fall on your pecking order, but I'm happy to help out.
Spamming the beat writers, that's us.
That's right.
All right, Ian. So Ottawa's on a 4-game losing streak. Are fans into that whole panic mode?
You know what? That's a good question. I think people are starting to, I don't know if panic mode is the right term, but I think maybe this was a little reality check. And it's not a bad thing. I think coming into this season, nobody thought they'd make the playoffs. And then certainly I think when they went, they started the West Coast swing, I think probably the high was they beat San Jose, and everyone's thinking, geez, like, you know, now they're beating San Jose, they're beating the Rangers, they're beating the Penguins, or, you know, beating elite teams. And the wheels sort of just seemed to fall off there the last 3 games of the West Coast trip. And then certainly the wheels falling off is the right term to use in Boston. So I think, I think it's a reality check. I don't know if fans are pushing the panic button, so to speak. But I think this is a critical, critical 24-hour stretch for them coming up Friday, Saturday. Like, you're playing 2 teams now that you're ahead of in the standings, and one in the Islanders that, you know, I don't want to say it should be a slam dunk, because the Islanders are obviously playing a little bit better than they were back in November, December. But that's a game you have to have. You're 12-13 points or whatever it is. You're ahead of the Islanders in the standings. You're at home, and it's a must-win game. I think you have to win that one. And then obviously the Toronto game takes on added importance on Saturday, just given Toronto having won, taken 7 of their last 8 points. And you know, Toronto's only 2 points back of Ottawa. So those 2 games, to me, if they come out of those with 2 losses, then I think you can hit the panic button a little bit. If they come out and they split, or they get, 2 or 3 points, something, I think they'll be okay. I think we should prepare ourselves, though, for if this team's going to make the playoffs, it's going to be a bit of a dogfight to the end of the year. And I think maybe 2 weeks ago we figured this team was going to just cruise into the playoffs, kind of riding that 9-1-1 streak. That's not going to be the case. So to me, I don't think there's a reason to push the panic button right now.
Are you kind of surprised that Alex Auld isn't getting the start tomorrow night?
I don't know. I mean, there's part of me that thought Alex would get a start when we were out west, and I thought it might have been the Phoenix game, and it might have been the LA game when they played the back-to-back. And when he didn't get one of those, I thought, well, geez, like, now when do you start Alex Auld? Because even if Craig had not given up that 100-foot slapper goal from Seidenberg and said they had lost 4-3, or even if they had won that game, I think you almost had to come back with Craig Friday against the Islanders because, it's your first game at home, and you really need to win that game. And then Saturday, you turn around, and you're like, geez, well, you got to go to Craig again. So I don't know when you go back to Alex Auld. I'm just thinking off the top of my head here. Their schedule now relaxes a little bit. You know, they were probably the busiest team in December and right up until the All-Star break. But, you know, I can't think of just off the top of my head, guys, when the next time this team plays back-to-back games. I mean, maybe they spot Alex Auld to start when they play at home against Edmonton, 10 days from now. That, to me, if I'm looking at the schedule ahead, I'm thinking that might be the most logical time to start Alex Auld. I mean, you don't start him against the Islanders, which maybe some people thought you would have, but now they need that game. Like I said, they need that game. So, you know, I'm a little bit surprised that he hasn't played since I think the last start he had was that Friday game against Calgary at the end of December. I think at this stage of the game, though, it's Craig Anderson or bust, and that you can't really fault Paul McLean because Anderson's been pretty good for them.
Well, I think you can rest assured that the next time the Senators will have a back-to-back, they're probably playing Toronto in the second half of it.
Yeah, we figured out that routine pretty much. I mean, like I said, like after this stretch of back, like this, these two games here that they play back-to-back Friday, Saturday, which I think it's a slam dunk that Anderson plays both those games, just given the importance. I just off the top of my head, I don't know. But, yeah, you're right. Probably the next time they do have a back-to-back is with Toronto in game number two.
So, at some point, you're going to think that Craig Anderson's going to have to get a rest. With Eugene Melnyk saying on the Team 1200 this past weekend that Robin Lehner is going to get a crack at some point in the season, do you think, I guess two parts of the question, one that we will see Lehner, and also do the Senators have confidence in Alex Auld?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think Alex Auld's been that bad. Like, there's not enough of a sample size for us to say that Alex Auld's been terrible. I mean, all he's had to do is, is come in and play whatever it is, he's basically starting like one or two games a month. And, there's a couple of games that they probably should have won for Alex Auld that I can think of. I remember a game in New Jersey in December that they had the game in complete command and, they gave up a couple of shorthanded goals and I thought Auld was okay in that game. And there's times where they've lost and Alex has been okay. And there's times that they've lost and Alex hasn't been okay. But, I look at this and I say, people seem to be panicking and complaining about the backup goalie. I'm thinking, this team's got 20, what? They played 54 games, so they got 28 left. Let's be honest here. Craig Anderson's going to play 23 of those games, I would think, 24 of those games. So now we're nitpicking about four or five games down the stretch, and I understand those could be important games. But, all these teams that rely on their number one guy, with the exception of Boston, which is just a complete aberration when you have two goaltenders as good as Rask and Thomas. I mean, Pittsburgh's going to have to put Brent Johnson in some nights, and Brent Johnson hasn't exactly been stellar this season. And, you go down the list of teams that are in the same boat. Even the Maple Leafs is a great example of, Reimer played okay on Thursday or Wednesday or whatever against Pittsburgh, but, he hasn't been that consistent either, right? So you kind of have to run with your guy, and there's going to be four or five nights down the stretch where you have to roll the dice in hopes Alex Auld can win you one or two of those games. And I don't think he's that bad, guys. I think he's a competent and capable backup goaltender of the National Hockey League who probably is playing a little bit less than maybe some people expected or thought. But at the same time, maybe that's a good thing that Craig Anderson's been as good as he's been, save for the last, game or two. Anderson's been pretty good. So I think, I don't think it's a huge deal, but I guess, to answer your question, I wouldn't be stunned if Robin Lehner came up and played a game. But, again, I think you're going to see Alex Auld at least get one more opportunity to start a game, I would think, until we, you know, if he goes there and struggles, then yeah, maybe it's time to think about plan B. But I think it's a little bit early to think about plan B right now.
He's not that bad. I like that. That's awesome. Oh, okay. Ian, we've seen today at practice the line combinations. I know they mixed up the power play units as well. It seems like Paul McLean is desperate to try and get the first line going, in particular Jason Spezza and McCulloch. And he's done a lot to shake up the two power play units. What's your evaluation of how Ottawa's forward situation is right now?
Yeah, I know. Just full disclosure here, I've been off the last couple of days, so I wasn't at practice yesterday and I wasn't at practice today. I did the game in Boston, whatever night that was, Tuesday, and then I've kind of just mentally checked out here for the last couple of days. So I saw that they did change the lines up, and that didn't surprise me all too much because, you know, I think with the exception of the Tourist and Alfredson combination, which for the most part has just been terrific lately, and I thought they were by far with Nick Foligno, that was their best line, hands down, on Tuesday in Boston. They haven't been getting a consistent sort of offense at times. You know, you can go through Milan McCulloch's struggles really since Christmas or since he came back from the concussion till now. He hasn't been, he's only got a couple of goals in the time that he's come back. And, you know, Zach Smith's another guy that, you know, middle of December we were thinking, Zach Smith might get 20 goals. Well, now you start to reevaluate that maybe 20 is a little bit out of the question. So, yeah, they switched it up, and, you know, they've got a couple guys like Condra and Greening that they feel they can move between top six and bottom six because they're smart enough, and in the case of Colin Greening, he's physical enough maybe to make some room for some guys, and you know, Condra, I think he's smart enough to plan any of the four lines. So didn't surprise me, and, yeah, the power play, I don't know, it's ironic that they switch up the power play because, you know, quite frankly, we didn't see the power play on Tuesday in Boston. So, you know, why they feel the need to switch it, I'm not sure. But at the same time, they haven't cashed in. They haven't looked as great on their power play really in the last, you know, you could probably go back weeks really since it's been as good as it was at late November, early December when I think their power play was really clicking. It just seems to be lacking something, and sometimes a wrinkle and switching guys up between Unit 1 and Unit 2 can sometimes help to kickstart things.
One of the things that Creech and I were remarking on before you came on was how kind of tepidly optimistic Eugene Melnyk has been this season. I know as we approach a trade deadline, a number of fans are going to be clamoring for an addition to go on a run. I know Ottawa's starting to slide in the standings a bit, but the playoffs are still obviously very well in reach. And we're just kind of wondering, like, if you put on your GM hat as you head towards the deadline or you look towards the offseason, what needs would you say Ottawa has, and what would you like to see them do moving forward?
You know what? I'll be brutally honest here. I would say I'd like to see them do nothing. Like, and I know that sounds pretty lame, and that sounds pretty boring, but I think that if you go out and you get a guy, and whether it's, I know people say, oh, go out and get Tuomo Ruutu or whoever, pick a guy that is a top six guy. I feel like you're raising expectations, A, and B, you're giving up assets for a potential rental, which I'm not sure that's in the game plan or in the budget. Now, if you're asking me, if you go out and get a role guy, a guy to play, 8 to 10 minutes on the third or fourth line, you know, and it costs you a middle round draft pick or later draft pick or a prospect you're not all that hot on, I'm not opposed to that. What I am opposed to is them moving a legitimate asset or a legitimate first round pick or second round pick to get a rental, because I think I just, you know, with all due respect to what they've done this year, and I think it's been fantastic to watch and it's been terrifically entertaining, I just don't know that come playoff time, if you add a top six guy, are they as good as Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh's healthy? Are they as good as Boston when Boston's rolling? I'm not sure, you know, but at the same time, you don't make the playoffs every year, and you got to strike while the iron's hot. So if Brian Murray, feels like, you know, this is the time to strike, well, then I suppose, you know, you can't fault him for doing that, because as a general manager, your job is to win now if you have the opportunity. So I could see that side of it. I have a feeling that they're leaning towards the sort of conservative side of things of, you know, maybe they add a bottom six forward, and maybe they add a depth defenseman, another kind of someone who can be a little bit physical if needed. If they end up matching up with the Bruins, if they end up matching up with a team like Philadelphia in the playoffs, and they feel like someone needs to control a Wayne Simmons or a Milan Lucic, I could see that. But I'm not sure that if I put my GM hat on, I wouldn't move a single prospect from this organization. I certainly wouldn't move a first or second round pick to get a rental. I think, you know, if they rolled into the playoffs today, let's say the season ended today, and they rolled into the playoffs right now, I think it'd be great because the expectations are pretty low. Like, I think most fans are thinking, hey, this has been a fun ride. But the minute you go out and make a deal at the deadline to add something, you're obviously, it's a great sign for the guys in the locker room, but it's also, you're sending a message externally that we think we're a contender. And I don't know. I think that this has been a real fun year. It's been a fun ride. And I don't think, doing anything drastic at the deadline. This is why I said a month ago, I don't think they should trade Philip Kuba. If Philip Kuba just walks at the end of the year, he walks. Like, that happens in life. Like, Anton Volchenkov just walked. And people walk all the time. It's just this bizarre fascination I think we have with, well, you got to get something for him. You got to get something for him. Well, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you just got to let the guy walk. And sometimes to do nothing is the best deal. Best course of action. I think in this case, like for Philip Kuba, I think the best course of action is nothing. Like, let him play to the end of the year. If they make the playoffs and he's great in the playoffs, maybe offer him a one-year deal, or maybe you just let him walk. But I just, I'd be hesitant for them to move Philip Kuba because I think it just sends the wrong message to the guys in the room that are trying to compete for a 6, 7, or 8 spot in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're all human, right? They want to win just as much as we do. Question for you. Obviously, looking at Ottawa's depth chart, they have a number of players who are under team control heading into this offseason. You have a few prospects who will be vying for forward roles, probably in the team's top nine. At some point, whether it's towards this deadline or in the offseason, Ottawa's going to have to move some of their top nine bodies. If you had to put your money on someone at the GM casino, do you have anyone in particular in mind who would probably be the candidate to go?
Wow. Yeah, no, it's a good point because that's another part of the thinking from Brian Murray at the deadline is, I have to think about July, August, September when there's going to be some guys knocking on the door to make this team. And we're not even talking about the Stefan Nathans and the Matt Pumples. Those guys are down the line. But, you know, Mika Zibanejad is a guy that I think probably made enough noise in camp last year that he's probably going to come back in September really looking to make the team. And because Brian went out and got Kyle Turris in December, like, these are top 6 or 9 spots that, in September weren't filled. So, yeah, you look at it, and the one guy that, you look at Bobby Butler and you think, where does Bobby fit? I mean, I liked the way he played last year. Don't get me wrong. Like, he had whatever it was, 10 goals in 35 games. And I wasn't one of those people that said, well, pencil him in for 20 over the course of 82 games. I just thought that maybe he would do a little bit more. Now, is there a market for Bobby Butler? I don't know. But that would be one guy that that you'd look at and say, where does he fit? Where does he fit into the plans here? Because everybody else, like Zach Smith fits into the plan. Kyle Turris obviously fits in the plan, and Jason Spezza. Some of it will depend on Daniel Alfredson and whether or not he comes back, and that'll be a pretty significant situation because you're looking at, I think the cap hit will still be there, but you're freeing up a spot, in the top 6 or top 9 that wouldn't have been there otherwise. So, maybe they'll have a filling or an opening there that sort of takes care of itself if he doesn't come back, but. They're probably going to have to do something at some point. And I look at it, and it seems like everybody seems to fit in. Jesse Winchester is a guy that I don't know what his status is going forward, but, he's been sort of squeezed out of things here, but not by his own choice, but obviously by injury. But it's going to be interesting because you've got some guys that are, fourth line guys that I'm not sure where they, where they fit or how they fit into this whole puzzle going forward.
Obviously, the Senators fans have been a little upset with the officiating lately. Do you think that's just something boiling over from how the team's played in the last couple of games or raised expectations on where these guys are going to finish in the Eastern Conference?
I understand. Listen, I'm not a believer in this conspiracy theory of you know, the refs have it out for Ottawa, or they, boy, they, listen, yeah, have they been on the wrong end of some bad calls in the last 10 days? Absolutely. No doubt, 100%, they've been the recipient of some just bizarre and head-scratching calls. But the thing is, we don't, as fans or media, we tend to look at things with such Senators' goggles that we forget on the nights when they get a massive break, we don't talk about that. Like, when Jason Spezza scored that goal at the Air Canada Centre, whenever that was, 2-3 weeks ago, and, you know, you could make the case that there was goaltender interference on James Reimer there, guys. Like, he's in the blue paint. He's kind of on top of Reimer. And, you know, no one talks about it in Ottawa, but you can better believe that the fans in Toronto were livid that Ottawa kind of got away with one. But we don't talk about that. And I'm sure that and I'm not thinking off the top of my head here, but I'm sure that if you go back over the course of the year, you could find 5 plays where Ottawa's the benefit of a referee's blown call or missed call in their favor. And now the pendulum swung the other way. I'm a firm believer that in the course of 82 games, it evens out. But holy smokes, has this been a bad week. Like, this has just been, like I'm scratching my head here. Like, I can understand the penalty shot call where we were in Los Angeles, right? Yeah, it was Los Angeles, where I've always been a proponent that anything that results in a penalty shot should be reviewable. And why not take, like, a penalty shot can be such a massive momentum swing one way or the other in a game. Why not take the extra 30 seconds to get that call right? Like, we showed that replay within 15 seconds of them blowing that whistle down, and I think it was Tim Peel that night blowing that down. We had that thing saying, look, like, you can see that he doesn't have he just pushes the puck. And so something like that is a head scratcher. But, you know, like the Carlson, whether he dove or not or whatever in Anaheim, you know, you can't, that stuff can't be reviewed. Like, it can't. But, you know, you wonder if, like, goalie interference and stuff should be reviewable. And like, same with that Alfredson goal in Phoenix. It's like, you know, Nick Foligno cuts across. It doesn't look like he goes through the blue paint. It almost looks like Mike Smith kind of comes out at him, and the goal gets whistled down and blown dead. It's almost like, you know, if this was the NFL, I think it's the rule that they just switched to this year. It's like every scoring play now goes to video review. So you just make sure they get it right. And I'm not a believer in, you know, let's blow down every questionable offside and let's blow down every, you know, every time a guy puts a puck over the glass, whether it hits something. But every time there's a goal, which is pretty darn rare in this day and age in hockey, why not take the extra 90 seconds and get it right? And I don't see a problem with, you know, I think they would have reversed that Alfredson goal in Phoenix. I really do. And I think they would have reversed the penalty shot call. So, you know, that stuff, I know we're talking about it, like you said, we're talking about it because they're losing. Like, if they're winning these games, it's a sidebar. But now that they're losing, it's almost like it's an easy sort of catalyst or sort of lightning rod for us to all, you know, rally around. And I was beside myself in Boston the other night when they called Nick Foligno for what appeared to be a pretty harmless trip with 2:45 to go in a one-goal hockey game. You're calling that against a team that hasn't had a power play all night? You're going to call that? Like, I mean, are you kidding me? After Chris Kelly, you know, cross-checked Chris Neal in the neutral zone, and there's a couple other plays that they just completely let go, and they're going to call that and basically decided the game. And so, yeah, I see the frustration, but again, I think it all evens out over the course of 82 games, but it's just been... if I were Paul McLean right now and Brian Murray, I'd be pretty irate with the way things have gone in the last 10 days.
Creech has his tinfoil hat on right now.
Yeah, he's a conspiracy guy, eh?
No way.
Could you imagine, though, if the Columbus-LA incident from last night happened involving Ottawa?
Like Ottawa, you know what the best would have been? Ottawa-Toronto. Can you imagine, like, Phaneuf comes in and scores with 0.4 seconds left,
yeah,
and then they find out that they, you know, Buddy didn't start the clock on time, or the clock was, you know, not quite... you know, in sync at the Air Canada Centre, we would have, like, there would have been outrage. Like, it's probably the best thing in the world that it was the Columbus Blue Jackets that lost the game, like, for a number of reasons. Not only are they not a massive media market, but because they're not really in the playoff picture in the Western Conference. Like, obviously, if you're Calgary or, you know, one of those teams, or Minnesota that's on the bubble in the West, you're really irate because you're thinking, LA just got a free point. Well, two, really, but at least that game was probably going to overtime. Yeah. But they just got a free point, for nothing. Like, really, that shouldn't have, like, who knows, that game goes to overtime, maybe, you know, Columbus wins in a shootout. And yeah, I mean, I can only imagine if that happened with a Canadian-based team, or certainly with Ottawa, given the week that they've had, it would just be a massive, massive story.
But you know what the thing is? If plays become reviewable, people will look at the situation room, the Toronto situation room that the NHL has, and they'll say, oh, that building's next door to the ACC. What's going on, guys? Conflict of interest.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to always be that way, because the NHL offices are in New York and Toronto. And so in the minds of some people with the tinfoil hats, I suppose you'll never be able to switch their viewpoint. But I still think it'll be better for the game. Like, I just think the NFL, like, to me, the NFL is so much better now this year that every play is reviewable. So, like, you know, even for a coach in the NFL, you don't have to waste a challenge flag on a close play scoring play, because they realize that matters. Like, 6 points matters so much in an NFL game. Like, why aren't we treating the one goal in a hockey game in the same light? I don't get it. Like, I just, and whether or not it's goaltender interference, we can't just, you know, we always say, well, it's referee's discretion. Well, yeah, it's referee's discretion, but what about, you know, going back and making sure that he got the call right?
Especially if they're trying to increase offense, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here we're sitting here talking about, you know, ways to improve scoring and maybe make the nets wider or the goalie equipment. Why not, you know, at least go with this route, at least to start to shake things up? But I do see their point, too. It's not like in the NFL, like, there's a scoring play and they call it back because they realize that there was holding. Like, you got to set some parameters, and I get that. Like, you know, you got to set some rules, and you can't have everything be reviewable. But I think there's, in hockey, it's so rare sometimes to get a goal that, you know, you almost have to be able to review it and to look at it, you know, one more time through the eyes of even let the referee do it. Like NFL, where the guy goes under the hood, you know, they don't necessarily have to go to the war room. And in Toronto, they could maybe do it the way they do in baseball too, right? The umpires all run away, whether or not it's a home run call, and they all come running back, and one guy kind of waves his finger.
Circles the finger, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, it's a home run. So it's, I think they can do it. It's just a question of, you know, whether or not the appetite is there from the other. I'll tell you what, you ask Brian Murray right now what his appetite would be, it would be probably to have that sort of stuff reviewed. But again, think of the Jason Spezza goal the other night where, like I said, he was kind of in Reimer's crease and maybe disrupting him. Maybe it gets called back. So maybe there's not you know, the great push from the GMs to change that too much.
That incident was just a good hockey play, Ian. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Anyways, Ian, thanks a lot for taking on the time on such short notice to come on and help us out. We really appreciate it. And hopefully I'll get a chance to see you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good night, guys.
All right. Take care, Ian.
Great stuff.
Cheers. Okay.
Another week, another show, the Sporadic Sixth Sense podcast. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, no, thanks for having me again. Ian was awesome.
Very charismatic.
He was good.
He's got a presence.
He was bang on with, I agreed anyways, with a lot of the stuff he said. He actually almost had me believing that Alex Selle deserves another shot, too.
He's not that bad. Love it. Love it.
No, he was good.
The one point that I liked that Ian mentioned is if what happened to Ottawa this past week raises, you know, the profile of reviewable plays, whether it's in the crease or whatnot, regarding Phillips' hand, I'm all for that. That's, you're making the game better, and yeah, it's just a positive outlook to have on the whole situation.
As he said, and he was tweeting that night, it happened in LA too. Like, it would take 15 seconds to review that. Oh no, his hand clearly wasn't covering the puck. Like, he just nudged it, for sure. Again, the NHL, there's so many rules that ifs, ands, or buts that they'd have
to
change.
Well, that's the problem though, right? You open Pandora's box. If you start making those calls for one thing, who knows where that could lead, but that's a story for another day. Anyways, man, I'm ready to go for a drink. My throat is killing me right now. So, are you up for it?
I think there's an alarm, Thomas, to get out of here. Something, I'm up for it.
Awesome. So that's the cue to get out. But everyone, thanks for listening. Ian, thanks again for coming on the show. Catch you guys next week. Cheers.